Good afternoon and good later afternoon, depending on which side of the coast you're on. This is the Juke Joint. I am the one and only Aaron New, joined, as always, by the other one and only Mr. Jacob Whitmore. What's going on?
Well, not much is going on here. I've just wrapped up my college semester for this fall semester.
So yeah, took a final this morning, you said?
Yes, I did, for media ethics and law, and I'm certain that it's the one that I will get the most incorrect. But
I remember that class. Did not like it.
It was so dry to me.
I know, but it's one of those things that they make you take, and it's just you kind of burn through it. I think I got through it with like a B or something like that. I wasn't really that engaged with it. So
I know. I'm getting close to the end now. I'm getting close to the end of this college experience. I think it's only like one or two semesters left, and then I'll be free to figure out how to live like an adult.
Oh, man.
Which I still have yet to figure out, mind you.
It doesn't get easier after college. I found that hard way.
Uh-oh.
I graduate college, and it's like, all right, like, I want to make a career in radio. I'm going to do something awesome. And then, you know, here I am working in a warehouse. I moved to the East or to the West Coast, though, so I guess that's a little bit of a perk. I get a little little sightseeing in on my
It has to be that fun thing for you to be on the West Coast and you get to be a tourist while living there.
You
get the simultaneous experience.
It's cool, except this time of year it's just like wet and cold and it's just not really friendly to go sightseeing. So the little bit I can get in is awesome, but most of the time I'm just kind of sitting looking out my window and I can see Mount Rainier sticking up off of the distance and thinking, that'll be nice when I can go to it in the next, we're probably 6 months from now. So once the snow is cleared off the roads.
I saw earlier today on Twitter, you were saying that you would like to do away with social media and have everyone speak in poems and books.
Okay, let me defend that real quick.
What's the context of this?
It is so cheap. It is so cheap to publish your own book nowadays. I just get curious. I just Google stuff on the internet. I have these ideas and I'm just thinking, I wonder how much it would cost if I like publish my own book. And then I think Amazon has a service called CreateSpace and it's like $10 to like publish your own book and then you sell as many copies as you want and they kind of like they print it and ship it whenever people buy it. It's like this is awesome. Like damn, like why put all my thoughts on social media? I'll just like write a book and be like, it would be the equal readership anyways. So
the thing that I will never forget, when I was really really young one time, it was around this time, the holiday season, and I was walking downtown with my parents and this homeless guy came up to us and didn't ask for money. But he pulled out his manuscript and he wanted us to read his manuscript for him of his novel he was writing.
Was it good?
I think I read maybe the first chapter and was very confused. So. It was like around the time when I was in elementary school. So it was like maybe I was 10 or something.
And so you were the ideal readership there.
I was the ideal readership. Read my manuscript, 10-year-old, and give me your editorial opinion. See if the publisher will accept it.
You'll get me published.
You'll get me published, right?
man.
I don't know. That might still be floating around here. I highly doubt it.
But if you find that, you should copy it and send it or just mail it to me or something.
I'll just want to see it. Then you can read his manuscript and see if you can get it published.
Yeah, but you finished up I guess you're done with your semester then, right?
Yes, for now.
And awesome.
Then that'll be till January. I swing again.
You got any holiday plans?
I don't know. I got holiday plans in so much that I'm probably going to have my hand forced to visit relatives who I feel no relation to. So
it's something.
That. I mean, it's a bit unfair now. Well, I don't consider it unfair, but to me, I'm at an age now where the real exciting thing of Christmas should be going out and getting the gifts and doing the whole thing, right? Like, I'm 22. If I want something, I'll just buy it. I don't need to wait for the holidays. So
I'm kind of in a similar mindset where like I like Christmas gifts, but I'm at the point where I'm buying them for myself now. And then I'll, you know, like my girlfriend will wrap them up and then Christmas Day, I just unwrap them and be like, oh yes. Oh, surprise. Like I bought this like 3 months ago, but now I finally get to use it.
The thing for me is that the thing I enjoy about the holidays really is the feeling of it. I try to say holidays all the time because I don't want to limit it to just Christmas because I know that there's people celebrating Hanukkah and other such religions. Or, you know,
Christmas Hanukkah. What was it called? Was it Christmas Hanukkah? Hanzika. I don't know. Something
I don't know. I didn't. I never saw the mashup version of it. I just know there's a Coexist bumper sticker that's got everything on it, or almost everything on it, and I just am like, yep, that's okay. But yeah, I don't know. I just like the feeling of it more. I like the idea that for maybe a month, people can try to be, you know, good people and not, you know, self-centered all the mm-hmm. time.
Yeah.
And inevitably, every year, I'm disappointed, so.
As is the way of the world, so.
As is the way of the world. Well, did you see that? Okay, did you see that Fine Bros video where they had a bunch of kids who were our age looking at episodes of Seinfeld and asking if it held up?
Oh, no. I'm worried about their responses.
It was negative. It was negative.
No.
They watched Seinfeld and went, this isn't funny. If this came out today, this would be really controversial. You're not supposed to make – they played like clips from The Outing, which is the episode where not that there's anything wrong with that came out. You know, and it's like, oh, well, why are they so homophobic? Like, I'm like, you people understand the joke is that they're bad people.
Yeah.
Like, that is the joke. That is the premise of the show.
Well, this was like, what, the 90s? So, like, just the culture of comedy was so much different then.
I mean, like, I'm not one to really nag on, like, oh, well, comedy's dying because everyone's so super sensitive and politically correct and da 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 da. I think that's bullshit. I think people who are complaining about I can't tell jokes because it's so politically correct are, like, just not trying hard enough. But I also do find credence in the claim that, okay, well, if you cannot understand that when there's an episode where Jerry's dating a girl who has a toy collection and he knocks her out not to take advantage of her body, but to play with her toys in the literal sense of she's got a toy collection and he's like wants to play with them like a child. If you don't get that is the joke, that you're not supposed to do that and he's being a bad person for doing that. If you don't get that is the source of the humor, I can't help you because you are now oblivious to the idea that comedy is in and of itself a critical medium.
Like, yeah.
you cannot have. I went to a lecture by John Cleese last year. John Cleese, who, if you don't know, is a member of Monty Python. And he was saying, actually, ironically enough, he was talking about how Jerry Seinfeld doesn't play at college campuses anymore. And he said, the problem is that we've got all these big problems in the world. There are people starving in countries. There's like war-torn stuff. There's people living under dictatorships. And yet we're getting so uptight about you said the wrong word. You know? I'm like, you know. I mean, I get both sides of the argument, but I also feel like if you cannot understand that the joke is that these are negative people doing bad things. And then you watch, oh, It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, and you're like, oh, but this is great.
This is
like,
the peak of comedy. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and I'm not going to throw any shade at Always Sunny in Philadelphia. That show's pretty good, too. But yeah. I'm like, well, like, what is the thought process here? I mean, if you're going to get offended at Seinfeld, of all things, if you're really legitimately going to get offended at Seinfeld, then how the hell are you going to watch anything like South Park or It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia?
Yeah.
Which are even edgier.
I know.
So anyway.
Oh, man.
I forget my original point.
This is a good transition. I'm looking at the list here. I know you wanted to talk about that recap of that event I went to, but if we're talking cringy things.
Well, I mean, I want to hear about you, though. We'll get to it.
Okay, because I'm really excited to talk about this because it is just
okay. Cold. So you know, here's what we'll do. We'll rearrange the running order. We'll talk about the event you went to last week later on in the show.
All right, I can just briefly recap it. I don't know.
Well, no. We got a good transition, and before we completely spoil it, let's use it.
Okay, so I know you saw it. I hope everyone listening saw it. If you haven't, you need to pause right here and go watch it. It's the YouTube.
Or not really. Life won't be affected in any major way if you skip out on it.
I think, well, I look at it from the perspective of like if you realize what was attempted and just how badly it was delivered. If you just look at it as just this is a horrible video, it's watchable. I wouldn't say it's great to watch. I'll say it's watchable. But
yeah. So speaking, of course, of YouTube Rewind, which is, for those of you who don't know, every time at the end of the year since like the turn of the decade, YouTube likes to do this little thing where at the end of each year they have this own little, they make their own special video to recap all the best moments of the year and all their favorite creators, all the people who rose to the top and were the big faces of the website and all the memes and things such as that, right?
Yeah.
And I have not found a single one that I don't think is at least slightly cringy in some way.
I think the first one was Rebecca Black. The second one was pretty good.
Well, I mean, like, there used to exist YouTube rewinds, which were just like clip shows of, hey, this video happened. And you know what? I think those are acceptable.
Yeah.
You know, it's when they start like pulling people in to do their Hollywood glitz glamour recap version of it that I'm like, ugh, make it stop.
I think the first ones I saw, which had like, I mean, Freddie Wong and like a lot of those YouTubers from like 2012, 2013, that era, those were pretty funny. Maybe just because I connected with them more because I recognized everybody in the video. But now it's like, especially this year, like I'm looking at this, I recognize three people in the entire video in this entire 8-minute stunt. I'm like, I don't know who most of these people are. And there are big people on the platform who didn't even like make an appearance. And I'm just confused what happened.
I mean, like the only, let me be quick here and say that I did like to a degree, I liked the little shout out that the animators got. I think that it's a bit of a sellout to their brand. If you see their regular videos and you recognize how not like popular crowd, we're in the meme culture that a lot of them are. There are a lot of outcasts like us, really.
Mm-hmm.
I think I have to give major props to Jaden Animations, who YouTube cut up her video, but they still left this in because they didn't notice it. So they had the animators, they told them, okay, draw yourself dancing to this song or whatever, right? And they had also said, we're banning PewDiePie because he's too controversial. He's not on YouTube Rewind this year, right?
Mm-hmm.
So then Jaden and her team of people, they animate this little brief extract of her dancing to the song. And then she starts spinning around in PewDiePie's chair. And there's actually an even subliminal message. If you look at what in the background of the shots that she animated, she's in a room that has a bookshelf of things on it. And on one of the shelves is a submarine, a picture with a peace sign saying 2 on it, and something else, and a pie. And it's literally, it's a subliminal message saying sub to PewDiePie. And like, people caught on that Jaden did that as a little subliminal thing to like still sneak PewDiePie into the YouTube Rewind of 2018.
I didn't even notice that. That's
hilarious. Banned him. And I had to give credit where credit's due. That is genius. That is absolute bloody genius. And it's calling out YouTube on their bullshit in the middle of their own video. And it's great. Beyond that, though, it's a cringe fest. It's just, I mean, it's cringier every year, especially in the past, I'd say, 3 to 5, because they keep catering towards the old traditional media. And I don't know why they keep doing this.
Well, it's, and I've seen a lot of people who were in the video, like Casey Neistat and was it Marquez Brownlee is his name? I can't remember. Yeah.
I don't know any of the, if you're talking about any of the other people aside from the animation community, I knew a little bit about Casey Neistat. I don't watch his videos. And beyond that, it was a bunch of like vlog people who like I don't watch.
Yeah, but like they made these rebuttal videos and they're just saying like, well, we went in to shoot this, we flew out to Los Angeles or wherever we did it. No pay for it. We did it for the passion because it's a cool thing to be a part of. And we shot these scenes and the context of the filming was hilarious. And like the part where they stand up and go, K-pop is just
K-pop.
Like apparently when they're filming it, like the context was absolutely hilarious. But in this video, it's just like, it's so dry and like. I think it's
taken for serious. I mean,
the original intent, I think, of the video was gutted somewhere. And a lot of people's explanation for that is just catering to ad.
Companies,
for ad revenue.
Well, I mean, here's the big problem. Okay. I mean, of the many big problems is that this happens every year is that YouTube Rewind will come out and then the creators will half-heartedly promote it. Like, yeah, I'm in this. But then like after a while, you'll suddenly see the videos of like more and more people who are well-known on the site or have their own followings. They go, I'm never doing this again. Because they're not getting paid. For one thing, all the YouTube creators that you're actually seeing in this are not being paid by YouTube to do this. They aren't getting any kickbacks from this. They're not getting a piece of the ad revenue. This is just a, oh, well, look at this. This might get you a spotlight on your work. People go, who are you? And then they'll check out your thing, and that might be what you get, right?
Yeah.
But I've seen people in previous years like make vlogs about how this is an awful experience. You spend hours upon hours just sitting around waiting for your time to be filmed. And then you're there for 15 minutes or something, and then you do your take, and then you're in the video for about 3 seconds. And then they flash to someone else, and a lot of the time it's people who the audience doesn't even have context for. Because I think one of the problems is that YouTube, they try to do a global thing with Rewind, which is that they will take the top creators from every single demographic of people who are watching their site, and they just get lost in the shuffle. It becomes an oversaturation of things. And there's no filter system either, too. There's no... What gets at me is that there's no filter system between who are people who are representative of YouTube and then who are representative of just things that are popular. I mean, let's talk about this. The very first thing. What is the very first thing we see in YouTube Rewind 2018? We see someone standing on a mountainside. It turns around. Oh, shit. It's Will Smith.
See, when I first saw
him. Because Will Smith is like so. If I associate Will Smith, if anything, I associate him with YouTube and not the decades upon decades of other things he's done in pop culture before YouTube.
It's weird. It's weird. Well, especially because like he's made, I think the argument for that is he's made this transition to YouTube, so a lot of people see him as a YouTuber now, not an act. Like a lot of the younger generation sees.
But that's bullshit, though.
An actor, and I'm.
That's bullshit, though. He can't make the transition to YouTube like the rest of us. It's not like he made a transition and he started from nothing and then built a following. He was a hugely successful, well-known celebrity who then made YouTube videos. He had an audience going into it. He didn't have to build into it. It wasn't like this slow ascent and, oh, look, now he's made a following. He had a following before he made a single damn thing. So you can't say he's a YouTuber because he already had it. He already had a following for decades and decades.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know? He had a following when he was a rapper, then he was on Fresh Prince, and then he made a bunch of movies. Like, people are, when they watch Will Smith videos, they're not going, wow, he's my favorite YouTuber. They're going, I like Will Smith because I see him on the TV all the time, and he promotes his kids all the time, and he's on movies all the time, and so I just like Will Smith. I'm the Will Smith fan club. I'm going to watch some Will Smith videos. But that's not a transition to YouTube. That's just I'm cashing in on the fact that I'm well-liked by a lot of people to garner a lot of views. You know, I mean, and you like that's what's happening.
Yeah,
it's the same thing. Later on, they got Trevor Noah and John Oliver dancing around.
Yeah, that was
like they're not YouTubers. Trevor Noah is on The Daily Show. John Oliver has got his Last Week Tonight program. They're not YouTubers. It's just that people watch their show on YouTube. It would be like, you know, I mean, if they had like a Hulu Rewind, right?
Yeah.
And then suddenly, like, all the people whose shows you watch on Hulu suddenly start showing up and doing all this. You're not going, oh, yeah, they're the real Hulu stars. You're going, no, I watch their show online. I watch clips of their show online. So by default, they're just getting in because, hey, a lot of people watched Trevor Noah's Daily Show clips online. A lot of people watched John Oliver clips online. Even though they aren't really creating for us, they are creating for the television networks that's giving them tons of money to make their shows. Like, they also get a ton of money by posting clips of their actual shows on YouTube. And let's just reward them for that, even though their whole presence on YouTube is undoubtedly to them somewhat of an afterthought. Even if it's not an afterthought, or they're like, yeah, we got a decent audience from people on YouTube. Like, that's not who they're making their shows for. Like, Trevor Noah is not a YouTube star. He is a host of a show that goes out on Comedy Central.
Mm-hmm.
John Oliver is not a YouTuber. He is a British comedian who makes a show for HBO. And then HBO posts clips of his show online, and then they get views. And yes, that means that he's popular, but that... Whoop,
oh, shoot, that? I just dropped my phone.
Oh, no.
I was trying to pull up the Rewind on my phone so I could watch while we're talking here.
Yeah, I mean, like, I've literally gone past the up to the first 8 seconds before I've even moved on. I'm just, this is what I mean by, like, you know, okay, well, we'll give the YouTube Rewind spotlight to celebrities who don't need it, because they will be big and popular no matter what they do, because their work caters to a completely different subset of people, which is people who watch television. If they are popular on YouTube, it is because they are being watched by a group of people who don't watch television. And that is like a sign that they have good quality of work. I'm not going to take that away from them.
Mm-hmm.
I think if people are watching John Oliver and they like him so much that they aren't going to sit around and wait to watch him on HBO on their TV, they're going to wait for YouTube to start posting the clips, and they are going to watch him however they're going to watch him. Like, then that's a sign of the success of his show. But he's not a YouTuber. He's a television show host.
Mm-hmm.
So acknowledge that. Acknowledge that they are just posting clips of their television shows.
Yeah.
You know, that's not creating content. That's making television. And that's a different thing than making a YouTube video. So 8 seconds in, Will Smith. And then he looks at his phone. And he goes, ah, it's rewind time. And then...
Something tells me, based on like these people like talking about being there and filming, it seems like the intent was like perfect, but somewhere in the editing process or YouTube stepping or whatever, just like completely gutted it, because it jumps around so much. There is no coherent order or story or anything to this.
Well,
video.
There's never been a coherent order or story to YouTube.
But even worse, like, I feel like they're just like, and not to knock on this, because they're talking about like, yes, like underrepresented creators and that whole bit in the middle. Like, that was a cool bit for like the message, but like it just, the way it was placed in the video and the way it was presented just felt very forced.
Well, and there's notable omissions. I mean, if we're talking about the middle of the video, we're jumping ahead to when they go, hey, let's give a shout out to da 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 da. Okay, let's talk about how, A, you've banned the most popular creator on your entire site because the Wall Street Journal didn't understand a joke. Like, so you've done that already. Two, if we're going to be talking about, let's give representation to people who've shown a light on mental health illness, where the hell is Shane Dawson?
Exactly.
Made his, like, fucking huge, like, long Jake Paul video series about what is a sociopath, what is people with mental disorder, all this other stuff. And I don't even watch Shane Dawson's videos, and I watched that thing because I recognized that it was a big fucking deal.
Yeah.
You know? So then, like, where the hell is he? Where's Phil DeFranco? It's like, there's these like notable omissions of, well, that person's not here, that person's not here, that person didn't. So I'm going to keep running through this. So Will Smith pulls out his phone, he goes, it's rewind time. And I guess I have the power of rewind. What am I going to make it? And then he does a fucking Thanos universe ending snap. And then we're on a bus. We're on a bus, and then literally the look of the YouTube creators looks so fed up.
I know, it's like, just like, why are we here?
The first line is, really? This is what you wanted? As if, like, you're saying, yep, this is it? This is really what you got? And, like, they can't even hide it anymore. They used to be really good at, like, hiding that they were really annoyed by the whole thing, and now they're like, nope, we're just, like, rebelling on set while you film this. And then, and mind you, of the people who are on this bus, I know literally none of them.
I know the first guy, that's MKBHD. And
I mean,
the rest, everyone. But like, it's like him and Casey Neistat and Will Smith. Everyone else in the video,
half these people aren't even speaking English. So they need to have like, they're like translated through captions, which mm-hmm. is not like, I mean, the. Before people jump down on my phone about that, I would recommend that maybe if YouTube wants to have a spotlight on every single creator, maybe, I don't know, make more than just one YouTube Rewind for the whole site. Make one for the Asian demographic, and I mean as in the people who are watching in Asia. Make one for the people who are watching in the UK. Make one for the people who are watching in the United States. Because just like every other media form that exists, different people are more or less popular in different regions of the world.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't throw everybody at us and be like, yeah, you know them. No. Who the hell these people are? So then they're on their bus, and then they're like, well, we've had enough of this. We're going to suicide jump out of the bus. There they go. Whoosh. Oh, they're all dressed like they're in the Magical Mystery Tour, and they're jumping off. I don't even see them with parachutes. I think they've just ended it. And then there's these two people who are in have a shopping cart on an island or something. I don't even know who they are.
The whole thing is just like a fever dream. It's the best way I could describe it. I don't know how else to think about they it besides want, like I, the, I.
One of them says, "I want Liza," and as in like Liza Minnelli or something. And then this person shows up, who I guess is Liza. And then they're really happy that they're in the shopping cart. And whoop, they zoom off.
They zoom off the ramp
with, into the sea. And then we have this moonshot of a monkey.
Wait, are you going to go through the entire video and just recap it?
No, because then a lot of it is just these people, like, at this fireside thing, who are like, "Wow, we got the power of YouTube. We can do anything we want. Let's give the people what they want." And then the first thing, they all go, "K-pop!" There's like, and then everyone's like, "Yeah,
who wants K-pop?
Because remember a couple of years ago when K-pop had a popular resurgence? I don't even remember K-pop being big in me. Like, I don't even remember there being a K-pop resurgence this year.
I don't remember. Yeah.
The last time I remember.
2012.
Yeah. The last time I remember K-pop being in the mainstream was Gangnam Style. That is literally the last time I remember K-pop being in the mainstream. And beyond that, I have not seen anyone reference it since. So, it wasn't even big in the. I mean, it wasn't even big in the music world this year, I don't think. I think the big names in the music world were Ariana Grande and, like, Cardi B.
Yeah.
And, like, and beyond that, like, I can't really think of anyone else. And even then, they were both, like, there and gone in, like, a span of a couple of weeks. I mean, Ariana Grande is kind of sticking around. But, like, because people are really loving that single of hers. But, like, beyond that, like, the music thing this year was, like, such a mess. It was a blend of, like, a bunch of stuff just, like, going in and out, and it all sounded the same. So, well, I can't even, like, say, like, "Oh, yeah, the K-pop thing really took off this year," because I can't even tell.
K-pop's here to save us.
K-pop's here to go. Can I have a... Since someone goes, "Can I have a royal wedding?" And was that a thing this year?
A royal wedding?
The royal... Okay, to Bongo Cat, which I guess is a meme that I've never seen in my entire life. Someone goes, "We need more science," and then Vsauce never makes an appearance.
I wish.
If you're gonna say, "We need more science," maybe, I don't know, get the most popular or like scientist.
I want to see
show.
I want to see a YouTube rewind with like How To Basic and just like that weird part of YouTube.
I want someone. Have you seen the like real the like edits of YouTube Rewind where they cut in their own like what are the highlights of the year?
No.
I would like someone say let's give a shout out to science, and then it goes to How To Basic, and they just throw something at whoever said that.
Yeah.
That'd be amazing.
Oh man, How To Basic! I could talk about that for an entire episode.
What the hell is mukbang? I mean, I guess that was a thing. Was it? Was that a meme that went around?
Maybe outside of the U.S.
Wait, hold on. You know who really needs to be in this rewind video? Everyone who managed to do so. And then they cut to Mark Applier, who is with the Make-A-Wish Foundation. I mean, that's fair. I kind of get the impression that they were going to have Mark in it anyway. And, you know, I like Mark Applier, but he's a sucker for Hollywood. And, you know, so I'm glad that at least he was like, "Hey, bring the Make-A-Wish people along for the ride. I want to give the spotlight to people who, you know, like, deserve it." So that's nice of him. I mean, he's a good soul. So I don't know. I mean, like, the whole YouTube Rewind thing, what do you expect? You know, I mean, it's one of those things, like, they're going to be promoting... For one thing, it's because they're now the Hollywood system, or they're trying so desperately to be the Hollywood system. They're
not going to be... YouTube isn't it a bigger platform than, like, Netflix and a lot of other platforms combined or something like that? I think it's got a user base of, like, billions.
Yeah, but the thing that gets at me is that I don't think it's a fair comparison to make, because I don't believe that the people who go on YouTube are using it for the same reason they watch Netflix and Hulu or anything like that, or television. I don't think it's worth comparing, because I think the whole point of YouTube, I mean, it obliterates me that we keep overlooking the fact that the site is called YouTube, as in you on the tube. You, the consumer, the individual who thinks I need to get a contract with a television company or a film company to make video content. No, get a camera, get an easy editing software, film some shit and post it. That's all you have to do. It's the, like, what gets at me is that the whole YouTube premise is that it's supposed to be the punk DIY version of making entertainment. So it's not fair to me to compare it to Netflix or something like that, where Netflix is a streaming service for movies and TV. Like, the Netflix is digital, yes, but it is still a representation of the old guard of media. It is traditional media on a computer. YouTube is meant to be a whole different kind of beast. And they so cater towards, well, we want to entertain the... We want to build YouTube Red. We want to make our own, like, television shows and cater to the idea that we actually are a substitute for television. When they don't understand that, yes, they are a substitute for television, but because people are so sick of seeing overproduced junk, that's why they're watching it. Because it's inspiring to know that someone is out there who's like you, or is like your friend, or is like the neighbor down the road. You know? That's why it's interesting. At least that's why it's interesting to me.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't give a shit whatever Hollywood thing they pump out, because Hollywood's going to be pumping out stuff all the time. They've been doing it now for over 100 years. They're going to keep on going. It doesn't matter. You know? They say, oh, well, people aren't going to the movie theaters anymore. Because the medium has changed. You went from going to the movie theater to watch a movie to watching it on the television to watching it on your computer. That's just in the growth of digital technology. But digital content, that's a different beast altogether, and YouTube fucking created it. And they're ashamed of it. That's what gets at me.
You got a lot to say about YouTube, I can tell.
Well, I mean, I've been doing it for ages and ages and ages, and, you know, the main point I'm getting at here is that fanfiction drinking games was a completely original idea that was great and creative, and no one watched it. And why didn't they? That's the main point I'm getting at here.
Which is also transitions. I think we're really good with transitions here.
Well, you know, that's how it be.
So talking about, like, trying to find an audience on a platform that's as massive as YouTube. I mean, what was your process like? You know, because you had 3 seasons of the show, but I mean, the audience was, not to be rude, but it was pretty small and pretty dismal. I mean,
the audience has always been small and dismal. I've gotten 2 videos in my entire life that have ever had a substantial amount of views, and the first one doesn't exist anymore because I deleted it, and it was literally just a reposting of a Pink Floyd song.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that was it. And it got, like, over 100,000 views. That was the most popular thing I ever posted. Was literally, I just posted the audio to the Pink Floyd track, several species of small furry animals gathered together in a cave and grooving with a pict. And I just uploaded that. So that way a friend of mine could hear the song.
Yeah.
And then that got, like, almost 500,000 views at some point. Like, that was it. And then beyond that, there was an episode of my first real show, which was called The Lazy Players, that has, like, about 1,500 views on it. And I don't really even know why that it is, you know? I think it's just because I called it, you know, Lazy Players Mario Kart 64 Secret Hidden Easter Eggs.
Mm-hmm.
So people are probably typing in thinking they're going to get, like, ooh, what are the Easter eggs in Mario Kart? And then it's that show. But
yeah. So what's been your process for trying to build an audience over time? You know, like, let me take that back. What's been your experience with trying to develop a show for so long and then having that happen?
So develop a show or build an audience? Because those are two different.
Well, I guess I'm meaning building an audience with the show.
My hope really is that the show eventually touches on someone who thinks this is good enough that I want to share it with people. That is literally the only process I have, because quite frankly, I'm not a PR person anyway, and I don't cater my personality to the mass public, because I don't understand it, and B, I don't particularly like what I understand. So for me, it really just becomes a matter of I put out what I like,
mm-hmm,
and what I think is good. And my belief is that with the billions of people that exist on the planet, eventually someone out there who has the similar taste that I do in the media they consume is going to look at something I've made and go, that's good, I want to share it with people. You know, that would be my hope.
Mm-hmm.
Because I honestly have no clue what causes people to like things. I've put out videos that I think are trash and they get, you know, a pretty decent sized amount of views, or at least decent for me.
Yeah.
So It's an odd crapshoot. I really don't know what builds an audience. I only know just, like, what builds my own personal satisfaction in what I make. So.
Well, it's like, I think when we discussed this on an episode, I think that will never be released, but just the community, I guess developing a community of people to work with and people to engage with your content. I mean, in a platform that's so saturated with content, I mean, how do you do that?
And I don't know. I mean, when you say too that, like, well, you build a community of people to work with, that is a different process to me.
Yeah.
You know, like, there are people I've built, like, different groups of people to work with, like, about 7 different times. And it's a different process every single time I go around and do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, the first show I did or tried to do was a thing called Whitmer's Rant, which I can't watch now because the video's awful. But it took like half a year to do, and it was a group of people. And then I did the Lazy Player show, and that was a different group of people. And then they kind of imploded in on themselves because there was this raging war going on between people who wanted to be the face of the show and the people who actually were the face of the show. And then I did Fan Fiction Drinking Games for 3 years. I mean, that show to me is still like really original. And that the process of that was literally, I had a friend who showed me something and I said, this could be a good show. And then we went and did it. And then we did it for 2 years. And then the people I was working with didn't want to work on it anymore. And I was tired of, you know, having to always be expecting other people to meet my demands to do what I wanted to do. So then I did the third year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, that was that's the process for me. And then the show I'm doing now with the Gaming Weekend is just, I got tired of even working with other people. I was like, I just want to do something that's easy and I don't even have to put out myself.
Because
then I don't have to be expected to be, you know, able to learn how to work with people and be a decent director who can explain what they're going for.
Because,
mm-hmm. I mean, it makes sense to me. It's all in my head what I want to do.
Yeah. Well, especially I lived in Morgantown for a bit too. I mean, you grew up there. I mean, you don't really have much of a pull people to pull from. I mean, who else are you going to work with? Besides trying to get people on board who are transient, you know, with the same idea.
Well, and that's the thing too. I mean, I feel like I should save this discussion for a different episode, but I'll to briefly touch on it. That was the problem with season 4. I've filmed an entire year of Fan Fiction Drinking Games videos,
mm-hmm.
with the intention that I was going to make it the final year and it was going to be a new group of people and they were going to be as committed as the first group of people. And that just simply wasn't the case.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I had to come to terms and accept by the end of season 3 that in reality, I think a lot of the support for Fan Fiction Drinking Games that year was coming within people who were just in the recording studio I was in and liked the fact that every Wednesday I showed up with free pizza and Coke. Like, I don't think they gave a shit about what video I was making.
Yeah.
So then suddenly when I was working with some select members of those people, you know, it was hard to do because there were people who, like, really did not understand the concept of the show. Mm-hmm. It became a process, especially in season 3, of every week I had to keep pitching the idea of a show that had already existed for 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And that was fucking hard, you know? Because after a while, it's like, why do I have to keep selling what I already know is good?
Yeah.
You know? I mean, that is tricky to maneuver. And it became a problem. I mean, by the end of season 4, the atmosphere was so negative on everyone's end. But it was like, there was clearly this, like, lack of interest. And no one was saying anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, well, then I don't want to put this out.
Yeah.
You know, I like rushed to finish it and it became like a, you know, to finish taping it in the off chance that eventually I will potentially put it out to the public to see, which mm-hmm. I don't think will be anytime soon.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't know. It just was one of those things. And then I had to thank John Fox, the co-creator of Fan Fiction Drinking Games, for finally telling me, why don't you just do a show on your own? And then you don't need to rely on other people. And that's the Gaming Weekend. And
mm-hmm.
from that, you get things like the Lemon Sketch, which, you know, are just, like, I couldn't do that on Fan Fiction Drinking Games because then that would come the process of, well, I would write the Lemon Sketch and then I'd have to explain it. Mm-hmm. And people would go, well, I don't understand. Why are you doing this? And like, well, look, the point is that if you just do this and then you see the finished product, you'll be happy with what comes out because it'll make sense at the end. I can only describe it to you so well mm-hmm. without like literally just reenacting what I have in mind for the video.
Yeah.
And that's hard to do. I mean, it's a classic problem of like, if you have nothing, you get nothing. If you have everything, then they give you everything.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a different process.
So you migrated, if like I'm just turning into a Q&A with you now, but.
No, I mean, hey.
But so you migrated, you went from like your personal channel, you're ever on the Serenade Caffeine channel now, and you're doing this gaming weekend. I mean, I'm kind of curious to know what your goals with this, because I see you're regularly uploading content on that, which is cool. And I think it's pretty entertaining content.
Have you shared it with anyone?
I have no one to share it with.
I don't know what that means, man.
I guess I could share it on Twitter, but I don't know. If it just like my reach is limited, which sucks. But enough, we'll talk about that in a minute. But I'm kind of curious to know. What are your goals with this? Where do you want to take this?
Guys, I'll be honest with you. I don't have any goals anymore, really.
Really?
I stopped because to me, I thought to myself, the fan fiction drinking games, I'd done that for 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll talk about this briefly. And it's unfair because I'm kind of throwing people under the bus when I say this. But I think actually, if I had kept the first lineup of FFDG, I think we actually would have gotten decent.
Mm-hmm.
Because by the end of season 2, I was getting Facebook messages from people in California
mm-hmm.
who had watched the show and were like, this is hilarious and great, can keep it up.
Yeah.
And they stopped watching once season 3 turned around because then all the cast changed and the setting changed and it was a completely different show.
Yeah.
And I recognized that, but that was how it was. And it became a thing of like, well, then the show, whatever potential that show had, kind of left it when the rest of the people left.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a bit unfair to me because I thought it was a good show and I thought that it was worth continuing on. And I don't hold any grudges against the people who left the show, but that is kind of what happened. And once finally I was doing season 4 and then I started watching videos of Jaden's and James's, The Odd Ones Out,
mm-hmm.
I just was like, they are younger than me and they've been doing this for a less amount of time than me and they're killing it.
Mm-hmm.
They have skyrocketed to the top. They've got over 1 million subscribers and every single video they put out gets like number one on the trending page like every single time. And I had to reason with, and I started going, well, what do they have? What is it that they are doing? What is the difference between what they do and what I do? And what I realized is that they are so honest and real with the audience. And they're able to put their defenses down and say, look, here's who I am. This is my outlook on the world. And I'm just going to give it to you straight. And the only conceit I'm going to make is that I'm going to draw it out rather than speaking to you in front of a camera.
Mm-hmm.
And I recognize that that's what makes them work. I recognize that that's what's genius about their content. And I recognize that that's what I can't do.
Yeah.
Because I personally could not make a video like Jaden or James does. And not because I can't draw, which I can't. But because you have to have a certain charisma to make that work.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't have it. I mean, I'll admit it. I don't have the charisma to be able to look back on my childhood and adolescence and tell a funny story about it. Because quite frankly, I fucking hated my childhood and adolescence. I lived a shitty fucking young life, you know, where I went to school every day and got taunted for liking a band from the 60s. And I would go home and be told by my dad how I was a failure of a human being. And then he died when I was 15. So it's tough for me to really put a positive spin on my outlook of my young life. So I couldn't do a video like Jaden or James does because I don't have the charisma to be like, oh, I remember when I was young and this funny thing happened to me. I just am like, if I try to remember my youth, I'm like, that was shit. And people acted shitty to me. I fucking hated all of it. So I can't do that. I could only try to be charismatic about what I'm doing now,
mm-hmm.
which is why then the gaming weekend becomes really, I'm not even a gamer. I don't view myself as a gamer, but I'm doing mm-hmm. these gaming videos. And I think what makes them funny is that I'm really just freebase commentating. It's a very stream of consciousness commentary. And I then embellish it with editing. And, you know, sometimes I'll just have one weird idea like the lemon sketch and I'll just put that in for no reason.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's what makes it work for me. That's what my ambition is. But I've really stopped trying to be like, well, I'm going to try to finally make it big because I don't think I can, honestly. I think I just don't have the charisma and the ability to sell myself like a PR person to make that work.
Mm-hmm.
And I to be honest with you, I don't even know if I would if I could, because I don't really like the idea of selling myself as something that I'm not and,
mm-hmm.
you know, start making all these sponsorship deals and catering to companies and all this other stuff. I have no interest in it.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like selling out to myself and also insulting the intelligence of my audience. So what about you? You've had your own sort of experiences trying to build audience platforms in a different span, though, than with YouTube. I mean, you did YouTube videos for a while, but you also were like, you've been in the music biz trying to garner an audience for your own projects. And,
oh, that's such a thing in itself. I mean, yeah. So, I mean, trying to create any sort of audience online, whether it's, you know, being a musician, at least in my case, being a musician or trying it with like photography and video and that sort of thing. I don't know. It's difficult because I've not found my niche yet, I guess is the best explanation I can find. You know, like I haven't been able to generate consistent content of the kind that resonates with a lot of people. I think if I could put effort into it and start generating more, you know, consistent content, so at least just a regular feed of something new. But I think just trying to find that niche and getting people engaged with something that you might not be able to find elsewhere, it's hard, especially at this point. I mean, on every bit of social media and every bit of these outlets you have to have a voice. I mean, there is a lot of people doing a lot of different topics, and you know, how do you find your voice in that when someone dustles around you out?
What's the developmental process for you? Because I know of me, like if I'm developing an idea, it's sort of, I just like come up with something I want to see and then I just build on top of that.
Mm-hmm.
But you kind of are more of a perfectionist, I would say, in some sense. Or at least that's the kind of impression I got from being on the sidelines and watching you create things in songwriting and stuff like that. Like,
I think
there's a lot more like tinkering with finite details and stuff.
Yeah, I think of, and whether I realize it or not, I've gotten to that point in the past couple of years where when I go to create something, whether it's with the band or I'm doing like photography and stuff, like I can't make myself happy with just like getting it done and getting it out there. Like, you know, I got to sit and really tinker with things and really, and of course my skills only take me so far, but like within my ability, try to make it the best it can be. So I sit with a photo I took and I'm, you know, spending an hour on the edit and I can't quite get it where I want it. It's just outside of my ability at this point. So, I mean, that's an example of that. Or when we're doing songwriting with the band, I mean, this is not just me. This is one of the ways we work as a band. It's just that we spend months on a song, if not years, trying to get it down to something that feels, I guess, more like us. Cause you know, we could spend so much time getting the structure and stuff down and getting these songs done, and then sit on it for like a bit and then come back to it and realize like, this is not done. Like what we thought was done, we can never really feel like something's done, you know, cause we always come back to it later and we're just struggling to piece things together and add to it and subtract things and really get it fine tuned to where we like it. So,
but then does that beg the question of when should the creator put the limit on themselves and put the time limit on themselves to say, this is as far as we can go and we need to accept that maybe there's imperfections in this, but that's just a part of the piece.
Well, I think, and something I've realized more recently too, is you can't, especially someone with my skill set trying to develop it, you can't sit and try to make it perfect. Because if you sit and try to make it perfect, you're going to be spending so much time working on one thing or two things. When to me, and I'm sure to a lot of other people, the best form of learning and the best form of developing yourself is just to constantly create. There's this quote, I actually got it like on a post-it note to kind of remind myself of it at this point. I keep like a post-it note over on the side of my desk. It just says, done is better than perfect. I don't know who, I can't remember where I got it from or who said it, but to me, it's like a good philosophy, because at this point in my developmental stage of content creation. You know, it's better to give it your best, put it out there, learn from your mistakes, and then once you've learned from those mistakes, you know, don't do it again next time. And then through doing that, through constantly creating content and learning what you did wrong and applying these new techniques as you go, you get to be a better creator. So that's kind of,
I would agree with that.
Yeah. So that's kind of where I'm at right now with that.
I mean, it feels to me like the natural progression of everyone's improving as they gain mastery of the skill. Mm-hmm. But I think that's one of the things that you need to be able to put your nose to the grindstone, I guess is the phrase. I probably misquoted it, but it's like, you know, I mean, I said earlier, like, I can't watch my first video because I hate it. Mm-hmm. It's bad. It's got continuity errors. The humor's dated, and it's bad camera work, bad acting, bad script writing, bad everything. I just dislike the video. But it took like 6 months to make.
Mm-hmm.
That was like a half a year in production. And now I can get maybe after doing this for almost 10 years, now just because I've done so much work and I've done it again and again and again, in like one evening I can record about 7 episodes of The Gaming Weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And then in a week edit 4 of them and have them waiting around, and then that's where about like 2 months worth of content that I'm sitting on for ages and ages and ages.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it's actually bizarre to me because I was looking at a video that's gonna go out next weekend as we're recording this, and I edited it back in October, and I just thought it was weird because I already didn't relate to how I'd edited the video.
Yeah.
I was like, well, I don't know if I would go there, I don't know, but I'm not gonna be recutting it because I'm like, well, that's what the product is. That's just where I was at that moment, you know? And I think it's just one of those things that as you naturally progress and you go on further and further and further with the work you do, you just finesse it a bit better.
Mm-hmm.
Every single time. It's a ladder. It's always a staircase, I think, is a better analogy for it. And you're always going up it.
Yeah.
And sometimes it goes down, but, you know, it'll eventually go back up again.
Mm-hmm.
And that just seems to be the way it works, is you develop the skills as a creator just through doing it again and again and again.
Yeah. I think we're starting to hit our time limit here. I know on our end, before the broadcast even started, we were going for like an hour. So
I know. At
this point,
it's insane.
You want to wrap up?
You want to wrap up?
We can wrap up.
Well, actually, we said that we were going to talk about
the event. Yeah, we'll cover that real quick because it was cool.
Last week, you were talking about how you, after taping the pilot episode, which everyone listened to.
Because it's definitely out there right now.
Because it's definitely out there in public right now.
Actually, by the time this episode goes out, I want to guess that it'll be out there once I get everything figured out.
Yes, hopefully.
Yeah.
We'll just release the first like 10 episodes all in the same time.
Yeah.
But after the first episode, you said that you were going to go up and check out this camera convention to look at all the new gadgets they were making. And
it wasn't much of a convention. It was like this small company. They got a little, not a shop, they got like their little HQ in a old warehouse in downtown Seattle. And they had a little event where they were selling some new gear and some of their used gear and returns and old gear and a lot of stuff. So they had like a holiday set up. So there's like cookies and hot chocolate and all that jazz. So I went up and checked all that out. The company is called Moments, which I think I've mentioned last week or on the last episode whenever we put this out. But so I went up and checked it out. I didn't buy anything, but they had like a bunch of free stuff. So I got this cool phone case and some free cookies and stuff. Got to meet some one of the guys who's like the face of their social media YouTube presence. And that was super cool. Met some cool people, met some other photographers. Downtown Seattle at night is the bomb in terms of just like aesthetics and looks, because it's just lit up so well. It's so cool. But overall it was a really cool event. Had a good time.
Very, very nice.
And that's very, the recap. Nice. That's the anticipated recap.
That's the whole story. And now you know the rest of the story.
So.
All right. So is that a wrap up then?
I'd say it's a wrap up for this episode. I think we've talked a lot about our opinions at the very least on YouTube and our difficulties in making good things.
Yeah.
Things that are worthwhile.
Join us next week when we continue to rant about how nobody watches the stuff we make.
I know. No, in reality, I think next week we may be off because it'll be the holidays.
Yeah, probably. I've got to work the next 6 days in a row, so.
Yeah, so we will not be here next week, but we will be, I want to say, what, like the next 2 weeks?
Yeah, maybe? I know. Yeah, we'll figure it out.
Where we'll probably be giving you our recap of 2018 and the media that we've consumed.
Yeah, definitely. All right, so, as always, don't forget to review us on your podcast platform. Send us some feedback so we can continue to develop this show and make things better.
And maybe have people listen to us.
Exactly. But yeah.
Then we don't need to complain about it anymore.
Yeah. You can find me on Twitter at Dale Earnhardt. Whitmer, your Twitter is, I still can't remember.
One of these days. Ren to Whitmer.
Got it. Also,
check out Jacob's Gaming Weekend on Serenade of Caffeine on YouTube.
All right. I think I'm going to link all that in the show notes too. So if you happen to miss it, then you can, find it there as well. But I'm Aaron. That is Jacob. This is the Juke Joint, and we will see you soon.
Bye-bye.